Conversations with Maria Menounos, podcast edition, inspiration.
Is there anything she can't handle? She looks fear in the face day after day, but yet she never runs. She's unbreakable. She's a warrior. She's you.
Growth.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Community.
These things happen because you have to live your true self in a bigger way.
Featuring the best of Maria Menounos' SiriusXM show with celebrity and life-changing interviews, thoughts on the week, and more. And it's free. All we ask is that you rate, comment, and subscribe on iTunes and tell a friend to subscribe to SiriusXM. Listen to Conversations with Maria Menounos on SiriusXM Stars 109 at 1 p.m. East. And now here's your host, Maria Menounos.
Happy Friday, everybody. I ain't gonna live forever. A little Bon Jovi action for you. Of course, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame recently. I think it was just like last weekend or something. So we're coming in with It's My Life because it is your life. And we want to take control of our lives and live healthier, happier lives. And today's podcast is going to hopefully help you do that and get you in the right direction. We're going to start with our quote of the day from Bon Jovi himself. Believe in love. Believe in magic. Hell, believe in Santa Claus. Believe in others. Believe in yourself. Believe in your dreams. If you don't, who will? The great Bon Jovi. So today, Miss Ashley Daniels, we have a really great show. I feel like I say that every week, but you know what? We do. I was stopping people on the street. I stop people on the street all the time. Like, oh my gosh, you have a dog? You need to hear our Pet Week podcast. So I'm like on the street subscribing to people in Beverly Hills yesterday. I'm like, you just got a puppy? I want you to have them forever and ever and ever. Listen to our Pet Week and let me help you.
That is so inspiring because it just shows like the hustle never dies, even at your level.
Yeah, well, I really want them to have that information. It's like, to me, I learned so much about how to keep my dogs healthy and how to treat them with different holistic things and such. And so if I learn stuff after 18 years of being semi-expert, then you know what? The everyday person will learn a lot. So yeah, that's why I still hustle and tell everybody, oh my God, download it. The best is, you know, you see the subscribe and you see the rate and the comment. I'm like, should I do that while I'm here? I'm kidding.
That's awesome.
Like, can you imagine all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, I love her show. She's amazing. And then they go back and they're like, she just wrote that herself.
That's amazing. That's actually the only other person I know that is like you in that sense is Bethany Frankel.
Mm-hmm. She hustles.
She's got it too.
Yeah, she hustles. That's our alarm to make sure we actually do this show.
Millennials in the booth, aka me.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good. So yeah, we do have a great show for you today. So today we are going to be talking to Dr. Christy Funk, who is a renowned breast cancer surgeon. She is incredible. She did Angelina Jolie's double mastectomy. She did Sheryl Crow's surgery. Of course, Sheryl writes the foreword to her new book, Breasts, The Owner's Manual. And this woman is amazing. She is at the forefront of so much research and new technology and such, but she really has learned so many incredible things in this journey writing this book that we all need to know. Her amazing food and diet discoveries radically changed her Yes. and her family's diets. And she was just jaw agape. She said, we don't get any kind of nutritional training in medical school. And so the things that she has learned and things that she has found out has led her to change her entire family's diets. They're all vegan now. And she talked about all the different carcinogens that come from cooking meat and grilling meat and, you know, and so many things. So you're going to learn a ton from her. And we're going to have to do a part two with her because there was so much info.
We are already working on a date because, like you said, there's so much information. The craziest part, Maria, is the fact that she truly believes that we have the power to reduce our risk greatly just based on our lifestyle and our diet.
Of course.
That's fascinating.
Well, here's the thing. Most things are largely preventable if we abide by the right diet and the right exercise regimes. We can really control a lot, like diabetes. I mean, 40 plus million people are dealing with diabetes. Now, type 1 is inevitable, but type 2 is preventable. And so anytime I've had an issue and I've dipped into, you know, pre-diabetes, I change my diet radically and I make my, well, not radically, I make the changes that I need to make and then things get better. And so, yeah, listen, we've all gotten into this place, I feel like, where sometimes eating bad is cool. And if you don't eat, you know, fatty things, you're not relatable. And I've fallen into that sometimes where I'm like, wait, am I doing this because I like this or because this is making me relatable and people are going to think that they're normal because I'm doing it? Do you know what I'm saying?
I totally know what you're saying. I think for you, you would probably think that more than people that are like, you're at a higher level in the sense that like, I feel like you always try to be relatable because you know you are a celebrity, but like you don't want to come off that way. So maybe you mean it like that. Like you're with like,
well, no, here's the thing. Here's an example. I'll be on a flight. And if I say no to the ice cream, the flight attendants look at me cross and they literally will say, you're not going to gain weight if you eat this.
No.
Yes.
Wait, that's so weird.
Yeah, it happens all the time. And so sometimes I feel like I kind of just do it so that they feel like I'm not this, you know, trying to be this supermodel and be super thin. It's just, I know myself. I've already eaten all this other stuff, you know, maybe leading up to it. And I'm saving myself for dinner when I land and I'm going to have a dessert at this really nice restaurant or whatever. I know what I'm counting in my head as worth it. And when you've just eaten a whole meal, to eat dessert right away isn't really appealing to me. I usually want to wait. And sometimes the ice cream on the plane isn't that good. It's got like freezer burn and stuff. So I'm like, I'm not going to waste it on something I'm not going to love.
Yeah.
But they kind of bully you into feeling like you need to show them that you are just like them. And it's definitely a little struggle that I have sometimes because, you know, I don't want to feel like that. And it's my fault. I shouldn't care. But I do.
You're not the only person. I do too. I've had a lot of people in my life do that too, where it's like, I know that I'm having dinner tonight and I don't want to have this thing right now because I'm eating in 3 hours. And people judge a lot based on if you're not eating at the moment. So that makes total sense. I didn't understand what you were saying at first, but now I completely get it. And that's your level, though. I'm surprised people would even say something.
You know, they always say something.
So
I'm like,
weird.
Wait, just because I'm choosing to be healthy, that's a bad thing. So,
you do have a six pack. So people probably are like, oh my God, what is her routine? Like,
it's cause I say no to the ice cream
exactly.
on the plane. Anyway, so let's take control of our health. And Dr. Christy Funk's book is really a must read for all women at any age so that we can be aware of, you know, the risks and preventing and all of that. You know, she was saying that like 13% of women have some kind of relative. I thought it was you were more prone if you had a relative. And she's like, no, only 13% have that kind of connection. The other 90% basically, or 87%.
87%, yes.
Comes out of nowhere.
Right. And it's amazing. She has a new, it's like a package that comes in the mail. You can order it from her website and you can test to see if you have the gene.
Yeah.
And it's something that you get from her website. She's trying so hard to make sure that people have the options available to them if they're underinsured or not insured.
Mm-hmm.
So she's really giving us all the tools.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them will come from this podcast today. I learned so much. Everything changed for me just after listening to that. Yeah.
What did you do?
Well, like in terms of meat, for instance, I thought because I don't eat meat that that's bad and I should start doing it soon because it's healthier. And now I'm like, okay, good. I'm staying on my path.
Yeah.
And even like with the fish and sushi, she was talking about she eats salmon every day.
I know. It's so hard. Sushi. I love sushi. But you know what? I think... honestly, when I worked with Yogi Cameron and I was trying to heal myself from all these rashes, I really learned that less is more with food. And, you know, the problem is we've made food into entertainment and as such a centerpiece of so much. And really, it's just supposed to be fuel to fuel our bodies to take us from point A to point B, just like a car. And so when you look at food in that way, and you take away that kind of like just fun entertainment aspect of it and you eat less. And I mean less, like little, like only eating when you're hungry. Try that for a day. I felt like I was in a straitjacket. I didn't know what to do with myself. I'm like, what do you mean eat when I'm hungry? I eat because something looks good. I eat because something's going to taste good. I'm eating because I'm anticipating I'm going to be hungry. Like, I eat for all the wrong reasons, and I was getting sick. And when I stopped that and I said, okay, I'm only going to eat when I'm hungry, it was painful because I wasn't hungry. So he said, if you think you're hungry, have some hot water and lemon. So a lot of times we think we're hungry, we're really just thirsty and dehydrated. And so I would do the hot water and the lemon, and then I'd wait a few more hours, and then I'd have a couple blueberries, and I'm like, okay, well, I feel fine. Like, if you really listen to your body doesn't need that much. And the more you put in, the more work it has to do to digest everything. So the less I ate, first of all, I healed from all the rashes. Second of all, I had boundless energy, which I would never have believed, because I was like, oh my God, I get headaches when I don't eat. Like, everything that everybody says, I would spit out too, because that's what we do. We just adopt everyone else's issues and make them our own. And not only did I not have headaches, I was flying high. I swear, if I started flapping my arms, I would have flown. I was so high, so happy. And the problem that came with that was I started to get too thin, and people are like, you look anorexic. Why aren't you eating? And again, back to what people, other people are thinking of you, and then you worry. So then you do things to make them feel better about themselves that really have nothing to do with you or your health. And Yogi Cameron would tell me, he would be like, Maria, look at them. Look at the people who are criticizing you.
Right. Yeah.
And it was very clear what was going on, but at the same time, it was really hard to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. Because people don't want to believe that you can look good and be healthy. It's like, oh, if she looks good, then she's anorexic. Or if she looks good, then she's, you know, she just hasn't eaten in a while, or she's doing this or doing that.
No, so just people are critical, people especially are so when critical. They can't do something, they have to be critical of it.
100%. And so with you, I think people don't like to see that, like, I know you have that six pack. You could still eat when you want, when you want to, because you do. I see you. When you want to eat, you eat. Oh. And then you still have rock solid abs. It's not normal.
Anywho, that's Dr. Funk's story. And then the other interview that we're going to share with you today that I'm super excited to share is Ben Page. He is a forest bathing guide.
Wait, what?
So forest bathing is this thing that I had researched, and it's amazing. So back in the tech boom in Japan, the Japanese started researching taking people into the forest. They said, you know, this whole tech boom thing is a little crazy. They started taking people into the forest and researching. And they found these things called the trees emit phytoncides. And they're antifungal and antibacterial and antimicrobial and all these things. And that's how the tree stays healthy. Now, when we as humans inhale phytoncides, it produces these white blood cells, or these things called natural killer cells. Now, if you have anyone in your life that has cancer, you know about natural killer cells, because you want more of them because they attack cancer. So they realized that this could be preventative care for people. It boosts immune system, and it, you know, helps with boosting the natural killer cells. And so they started to put people in different paths with these trees. And if people's blood, you know, cholesterol levels went down, or they would do blood work on these people through these paths, and then they could actually certify a path as like a cancer saving path or something. So if you had cancer, you would want to walk down this path, or if you had high cholesterol or some kind of immune deficiency. It was really cool. So I was like, this is amazing. So we had Ben Page come in and really educate us on it. And then we as a team went to Forest Bath. You weren't with us, right?
I wasn't, but I want to know, really, did you have to talk to trees?
I did. And I mean, no, you don't have to, but like, it's basically you go in to the forest and he gives you a series of invitations, and he'll say, go find a tree that you feel a connection with and just sit with it. And, or, you know, find a leaf that you want to contribute to this pile, or just different things. Like, it's called not being on your cell phone. It's called just connecting with nature. And it was so beautiful. And it ended, you know, on these big rocks, and you close your eyes to do a 20-minute meditation at the top, and you're in the middle of a forest all alone with just the few people, the four of us that were there. And he's prepping a tea ceremony behind us under this waterfall. When you open your eyes, the moon is out. It's dark and it's beautiful and ominous and cool. And you just went this whole adventure and this, you know, mini spiritual little journey. And it was just amazing and beautiful. And I can see why it helps with immune systems and all of that. I mean, even minus the phytoncides that are coming from the trees, it's just clean, fresh air, no cell phones, no antennas, no wires, no technology, just being still and living the way we were probably supposed to live before we got things all crazy. So I want to expose everyone to forest bathing. And it's becoming like the new hot thing. So you should know about it.
That is so cool.
Yeah. I told my mom, I go, Mom, go. I think it's an oak tree that really emits the most phytoncides. I go, Mom, we have oak trees in Connecticut. Go sit under those trees a couple hours a day and let's cure you of cancer.
Wait, that's amazing. And it's so interesting because you think about it, like a lot of people, I think the anticipation of what's going to happen once you get back to your phone, like how many calls did you miss? How many texts
did
you miss?
Oh my Lord, you're giving me anxiety. No, I didn't think about that.
Yeah,
I thought about
how can I throw
my phone in the trash?
Exactly. Right, right.
I was, you know, I really don't enjoy the phone. I use it for the purposes that I have to use it for and as limited as I can. But when I was walking back, I'll never forget looking at the cityscape at some point where you got to that place. You're in the forest and all you see is the forest. At some point you see the cityscape and I got such anxiety and I felt so nauseous because that was all electric and chaos and madness and life. And I'm like, no wonder we're all so sick and so anxiety and stressed. It's because think all the buzzing from all the wires and the electricity and the Wi-Fi's and everything and why we're all getting so sick. But when you're in the forest, you're in such peace and you're so connected and you have such a clean, healthy, happy feeling. So I didn't want to leave.
Wow. And did you ever end up doing it again?
No, but I'm dying to.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to put a group together.
Yeah.
That was going to be my profession for a minute because I really feel like I'm on a journey that I just have to find my footing first. I'm on my journey and I feel like I don't belong in the old life. I belong in this new life and I just have to make some solid ground for myself. And, you know, I'm still healing and such. So, but at one point I was like, I think I'm just going to do this. I'm going to take people on forest adventures. How fun.
Wait, that is so interesting. I think you had sent me something as well. I think they do similar things like this that you can get on the website where you can Airbnb.
Yeah.
People are doing things similar to this. There's regular people
totally
selling their experiences.
Yeah, I was like, I'd be the highest paid forest guide.
You would be so, seriously. Actually, that's a really cool idea.
I know.
You could give the money to charity or something.
Yeah. Or my bank account. I'm kidding.
Mama needs a new pair of shoes.
Somebody's going to make a living. So that's our show today. Of course, welcome back to the Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast, where we bring you free, fresh news, insight, the best of our SiriusXM shows from the week. You can find us here every Friday on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to like, comment, rate, subscribe, tell a friend about the show. We work really hard on it. And if you could do that for us, that would be so helpful. And we're hoping if you like this enough, you'll want to join us on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109 weekdays at 1 p.m. in your car or on demand, whichever way you consume your content. So thanks for joining us. And I hope you love these interviews. We're going to start with Ben Page and forest bathing. We'll be right back.
From news and pop culture to fitness and health to relationships and careers,
this is Conversations with Maria Menounos.
Guys, my next guest is an expert forest bathing guide and instructor, and he's here to teach us all about the art of forest bathing and how you can use it to improve your health. Please welcome Ben Page, everybody.
Hey, Maria. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, and thank you for the flower. He picked it from his garden. So I read about forest bathing a few months ago, and I was so intrigued, and I thought that it entailed swimming somewhere in the forest, and then I realized that the true definition was bathing in the sense of the forest and reconnecting with nature and
that this was actually a job, and I considered it for a moment.
We'd love to have you.
Well, listen, I swear I might. It's between this and panda hugging in China. But
that's a good one too.
But listen, I am someone who juggles a lot, and I think these two would be juggling two really beautiful things. So explain to everybody your definition of forest bathing.
Okay, so to understand the definition of forest bathing, you have to go back in time a little bit to Japan in the 1980s. And this is when they were having their big tech boom. And the Japanese government noticed that a lot of people were getting sick, a lot of cancer, and a lot of autoimmune disorder. So they put a lot of money into this research project about what happens when you take people out into the forest. And one of the big things they found is that trees keep themselves healthy by showering themselves in these allochemicals called phytoncides. And phytoncides are antimicrobial, antibacterial, antifungal chemicals. So if a fungus is attacking the tree releases all these phytoncides and it eats the fungus and kills it. So this is how the tree keeps itself healthy. Now, interestingly, because of the coevolution of human species and tree species, when we inhale phytoncides, it produces these white blood cells called NK cells, or natural killer cells.
Yeah.
And NK cells attack cancer cells in the body.
Yeah.
So the Japanese were like, oh my God, being out in the forest is preventative care for cancer. And that kind of opened the door to all this other research. So now they're looking at how it lowers blood pressure, it lowers cortisol levels, which has an anti-inflammatory impact on the body. So what you're really doing when you're forest bathing is you're bathing in these phytoncides and you're inhaling them and boosting your immune system. Now, my mentor kind of took that idea from Japan and he said, this is amazing, we need this in the United States. And he went and pitched it to the big insurance companies. And they were like, we love this, but you're just one guy and we're like serving millions of people. So we want you to go out and train and certify 1,000 guides in the US. So that's kind of our 5-year, 10-year mission, is to get people out. And because the Japanese are a little more culturally accustomed to being outside, we created this kind of 3-hour mindfulness practice that is based in the science. Of course, the forest is giving you all those health impacts, but then we're also helping people just slow down and awaken their senses and kind of bathing in just presence, like just being, not thinking, not running around and rushing to the next thing, just learning how to relax, because I think most Americans have forgotten how to relax.
Yeah. Ben, how did you get into this?
So
don't you want private jets and yachts and stuff? Like, are you going to make that on a forest bathing salary?
Maybe. We'll see. I mean, I think this is something that the world desperately needs.
Yeah.
You know, we're experiencing this kind of twin crisis. We're experiencing an ecological crisis where people need to feel like they love the earth to protect it. And then we're also experiencing this health crisis where digitalization and urbanization are really driving people into unhealthy lifestyles. And the fact is, our bodies are incredibly well designed by evolution to be healthy. Like you were saying in that previous segment, we just need to take care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We need to eat right. We need to get enough sleep. And part of that, and all of our ancestors knew this, is being in the forest. So we need to reconnect people with these natural landscapes, not just because they're utilitarian, but because they actually help us be well.
You are so well spoken.
Oh, thank you.
Holy moly. I say the whole private jet thing because I feel like we've all gone so into the pursuit of material success and not to the inner success, right? And
right.
I've fallen victim to that too, because you know, for me I followed my passions and my dreams and success came from that. But I think that we're not really pursuing our inner success and our inner happiness. And that's kind of where my journey is taking me now, is trying to figure that out. And I do know that when I'm in nature, I am the happiest person on the planet. I feel amazing. It rejuvenates me. Like I would have seen this little flower on the path and I would acknowledge it and I would smell it and I would feel it and I would admire its beauty. I love that stuff. So I think I'd be a really good candidate for forest bathing instruction. But I think hearing kind of where it all came from is so interesting for me to realize that, you know, this was something that they realized in Japan was really important. Talk to me about the natural killer cells a little bit more, because obviously I'm dealing with a mom who has brain cancer and everyone who's listening to this has someone that they're connected to with cancer. So explain that a little bit deeper to me.
Okay, well, I'm not a scientist.
Don't worry.
I can't give you like the full scientific explanation, but essentially these are specialized white blood cells that attack cancerous and tumorous growth in the body. And One of the ways that the Japanese do this is they actually certify trails. And the way they do that is they take 100 volunteers and they take a blood sample and they walk them down the trail for 3 hours and then they take another blood sample.
No way.
And if the NK cell count has risen to a certain quotient, they certify the trail. And so your doctor, if you're experiencing anxiety or depression, high blood pressure, instead of going straight to pills, they might say, hey, I want you to go do 3 hours of shinrin-yoku a week. And you don't even need a guide in Japan. It's just the doctor says we want you to do this, and they give them a map of all the trails, and they say, here are the trails that we've certified that you can go do this in. Pine trees tend to be the ones that really give off the most fight inside. So if you're like doing this at home, you really want to get the health benefit, just go sit under a pine tree for an hour a week.
No way.
And it's crazy because it's not like you have to move out to the forest. Like you can live in a city. Just doing it 3 hours a week recharges that NK cell count to the point that your immune system is boosted enough that you can go a week or 2 weeks. So I'm not advocating everyone's like got to move to Wyoming or you know, whatever it is. Just finding a way to integrate a little bit of this time. Part of it is just the relaxation and the presence and what you were talking about. And then part of it is this kind of physiological impact of just being under these trees and collecting those NK cells.
That's so funny. So I'm going to be calling my mom in T-minus like 20 minutes and telling her to just go sit in our woods because we live in Connecticut amongst trees. And since she's back there, I'm going to say go boost your NK cells. But I remember when we talked to this facility in Mexico, they were talking about NK cells and, you know, how they use that for therapy and stuff. But I haven't taken that approach. And we have free trees in our backyard, so I'm just going to go tell her to sit under a tree.
There you go.
So cool. I love the idea that you guys, that they'll test blood before and after the trail to see. So now, do you have any of those trails in the Los Angeles area?
So the Japanese practice inspired the practice that I do, which we call forest therapy. And we haven't gotten into that sort of scientific research. We're waiting for grants and, you know, the money to actually do that kind of work.
Do you guys have a GoFundMe page or something?
We're working on many different avenues with the Association of Nature and Forest Therapy. If you're looking to get trained as a guide, that's the organization that will do it.
Okay.
And that's kind of a project that is slated for the next 5 years. But part of the rationale of why we're doing things a little bit differently than in Japan is because I think people here are really disconnected and they just need a little bit of support. Kind of like yoga, you know, mm-hmm. A lot of people will, even people who are like masters at it, they'll go to a class because there's something about someone creating a space for you to do your work in and to witness and support you in that mm-hmm. that makes the whole thing a lot easier.
Yeah.
I get a lot of people that come and they say, I can never meditate. It's impossible. I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, but if you do it with people,
exactly,
it's easier.
Exactly. Yeah, and you do it with people. And with nature, it's like you're not even trying. There's no effort. You know, when I do a walk, I give you a series of what we call invitations. And I say right at the beginning of the walk, there's no right or wrong way to do this. If you don't want to do the thing I'm inviting you to do, just listen to your body and, you know, go out and find something that feels right to you.
Yeah, so let's talk about like how it works. So Okay. You take, like, we're going to do this.
Okay, great.
Okay. And so we go out, we go to this trail. You have like a twilight trail or something, right?
Yeah, I do one walk that ends kind of in the darkness of the forest. And Whoa. We always end with a tea ceremony. So on that one, I do a little candlelit tea ceremony. It's very cool by the
waterfall.
So
are you like lugging tea around? How are you doing this?
Well, I make a wild tea from plants that I harvest along the trail. So I have to bring hot water with me, obviously. And I bring a little teapot. I have a little cast iron Japanese teapot that I like and teacups. And that always ends our walk.
Wow.
The beginning of the walk, so when we train guides, we have a standard sequence that the association did a lot of experimenting with, trying to figure out how do we get people into this mental space of relaxation? Because that's, if there is a destination in mind, it's not a physical one, it's a mental one of just being present, you know, not thinking, not mm-hmm. being stressed, not feeling judged, just relaxing. So we start with an invitation called the Pleasures of Presence, which is kind of like a sensory meditation. It draws people's attention away from the mind and towards the body and towards the senses. So I might just ask you, you know, what can you hear here? You know, what's the sound that's closest to your body right now? With your eyes closed, what's the sound that's furthest away? What can you smell right now? What sensations can you pick up through your skin? What does it feel like to be standing on this mountain? So really coming into the present moment and being aware that our bodies are collecting an incredible amount of information that most of the time we're not paying attention to. Mm-hmm. We're just missing it because we're like going to the next thing all the time.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, and I talk about this since I got diagnosed and had surgery and my cabeza, that, you know, we're moving at lightning speed and we're doing so much. And the last thing we're doing is paying attention to our bodies and the signals it's sending.
So
this would actually be such a great practice to really help alert people to what is going on in their bodies.
Exactly. And then we follow that up with an invitation called What's in Motion, where it's a very slow walk down the trail. And I just invite people to notice everything that's moving. So part of this is paying attention to our own speed, and that we're trying to slow people down to the pace at which the forest moves. But part of this is also that we've awakened your senses, and now we've kind of released you onto the trail a little bit, and people are exploring in ways that in some ways are kind of childlike. It's more direct experience. It's not, oh, what's that tree called? Or, you know, oh, do I recognize that bird? It's more like, this feels amazing. You know, oh, it's so much fun to just touch the bark or to watch the leaves dancing in the breeze or to watch the sunlight coming through the trees. Like, there's all these things people are noticing, and they're not thinking about it in terms of kind of secondary thought. It's all this direct experience, which brings them into the present. And then they're not worried about paying bills or getting to work the next day or whatever. It's relaxing their brain, which is really healthy for their brain. Right? And that has impact on your entire immunological system. So just relaxing is helping you be healthier. Now, after that, there's a series of invitations that are kind of dealer's choice according to who your guide is and according to how the land is working. We say that the forest is the therapist. The guide just opens the doorway to connection. So in those It Depends invitations, I might invite you to do something like take your shoes off and wade around in the stream. Or there's one we call Sit Spot, where I say just wander out and find a place your body wants to sit down and give yourself permission to sit there and do nothing for 20 minutes, and then I'll call you back. And people go out and they have some wild experiences sometimes. I mean, I really think the forest is like this psychological mirror. Everything we're experiencing in our lives exists in the forest, but unlike our society, the forest doesn't hide those things. So, like, you see dead trees, you see things falling apart, you see entropy, you see suffering, and you also see those things coexisting alongside joy and wonder and beauty. And you were talking in the earlier segment about needing to feel perfect. And one of the things I think that's amazing about nature as a psychological mirror is it reflects back to us that nothing is perfect. You know, you see a tree and every leaf has some imperfection to it. Trees aren't worried about being perfect. They're worried about just being present, about doing their thing and being in that honest relationship with people. So I think a lot of people in LA that I take on my walks, they come away with some sense of that, of like, man, I'm always trying to be perfect and, you know, cultivate myself in a way that's more like, say, the garden at Versailles. And I don't let myself be wild. Like, there's something beautiful about this wildness in us that we tend to lose because of our acculturation in this society.
Yeah, that's so poignant.
Thank you.
What's the policy on cell phones?
You know, it depends on the guide. Personally, I've found that in LA, some people actually, if you make them turn off their phone or you take the phone, it makes them really stressed out. And that's the opposite of what I want, you know? We have a saying when I train guides, people ask all these questions, and I say, it depends, or what serves? You know, what serves these people? If it serves to take their phones away and that's going to help, then go ahead and take the phones away. If it's not, if that's going to really stress them out, then that's not worth doing.
Yeah.
So I often invite people to put it on airplane mode. And one of the places where I guide is up in the Angeles Crest, and there's no service anyway. So it's like, you're not going to be on your phone checking Facebook and Twitter and all that, but I'm not there to coerce you into having an experience that I think you need. I'm there to open space for you to have your own authentic experience. And if that's being on your phone for part of the time, I'm not here to judge you about what you do and what you don't do. As a guide, it's like I'm honoring this healing contract between the forest and the participant, and I'm not getting in the middle of that and saying, like, you're doing it wrong, or you should be doing it like this. It's all invitational. There's nothing coercive about what I want, you know, people to do out there. It's just opening the space and saying, go for it, whatever feels right.
So cool. But does it ever interfere with the other forest bathers?
I mean, I've never had anyone, like, take a phone call on the trail. What I usually see is people taking pictures of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a part of me that's like, oh, why can't you just appreciate it without this device in between you? But then there's also a part of me that understands that some people, they're taking the picture because they want to remember that experience. And that maybe that's part of the medicine of the forest for them.
You love what you do?
I love it. Yeah.
You wake up every day and you're so happy.
Yeah, I just got back from training the 18th cohort in Melbourne, Australia, and I was flying back thinking, is this my life? This is so amazing.
I mean, come on. Yeah. This is when I saw the article, I don't remember, I think it was in the Huffington Post. They were talking about forest bathing being the new cool thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, click, and I started reading about it, and I was like, wait, why am I not doing this for a living? I love nature. I love being outside.
The website is natureandforesttherapy.org.
All right, guys. I can feel it now. Everyone's signing up for forest bathing. Please tweet me a picture of you while you're forest bathing so I can see. Tag me. Next up, we have, of course, Dr. Christy Funk with her new book, Breasts, the Owner's Manual. Enjoy.
I've always loved going one-on-one with people.
Welcome back to Conversations with Maria Menounos.
Guys, we are with renowned surgical breast cancer specialist and founder of the Pink Lotus Breast Cancer Center, Dr. Christy Funk. She is here to teach us about the new trends in breast cancer treatments, as well as the diet and lifestyle changes we can make to help reduce our risk. Please welcome Dr. Christy Funk.
Hi, Maria.
Hi. So glad to have you.
No, thanks for having me.
Have you done the show yet? I don't remember.
I haven't.
Is this your first time?
It is. I'm a newbie.
Oh, wow. I'm so excited. So, full disclosure, I have seen Dr. Funk a couple of times. One time after a really nasty work environment, I was like, I don't know how I get out of this without breast cancer. I'm like, please, will you just make sure I'm okay? And who would have known? I ended up having a brain tumor instead. Thank you, nasty work environments. But it's true. I think you may even remember, I'm sure you have a million people, but I literally said that in the room. I'm like, I don't know how I escaped this situation without some kind of illness. I felt it. I knew it. And I think when you're in those situations where it's like constant fight or flight and your system is so taxed, it's got to happen somewhere. Something's going to happen.
It does. The psychological stressors in our life absolutely translate to physiologic ones. And day after day, if you stay in that fight or flight mode, your immune system plummets and illness takes the stage.
So especially ladies out there, because we're always the ones who feel like we have to stay in it for our families and such. If you are in a situation like that, figure out a way out right away.
Yeah.
Think about some stress relieving techniques that,
right,
you know,
deep breathing. I love diaphragmatic breathing, meditation, prayer. But remember that whole thing when an airplane goes down and the masks fall, you're supposed to fasten yours first and then your own child, right? So take care of yourself, ladies.
Yeah, it's true. So I want to talk about so many things today. So this is a manual for every woman to reduce their cancer risk, because you say, why would you not focus on anticipating, you know, and thinking ahead and making the dietary changes that you need to make and doing the things that you can do to prevent anything from happening? Why should someone pick up this book after the fact, right?
Right. Well, pick it up before, during, and after. It's for all women in any phase of life. But I would love if the vast majority of people come to this book and adhere to the dietary and lifestyle recommendations years before cancer comes into their lives. Because I do absolutely believe the science is there, and it is absolutely convicting that the vast majority of breast cancer and all cancers and all major killers, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, obesity, Alzheimer's, all of these things are largely under our control.
Yeah.
So to that point, of all the women diagnosed with breast cancer, only 13% have a single first degree relative with breast cancer.
I thought that was wild when I read that.
So
we all kind of are under the impression that if someone in our family has had it, we should go get checked, right? Like that's like kind of the marker for why I should go get checked.
Right.
And you actually also, I'm pretty sure, say that people should start getting checked at 35. Was 35 the age that you've said?
You know what? I probably told you that because we met so long ago.
Yeah.
But the data now, I've shifted. If you're at normal risk for breast cancer, I want you starting at age 40.
Okay.
35 comes into play if you're closest relative had breast cancer at 45.
Does a first cousin count?
A first cousin counts when we try to factor in your risk of carrying a genetic mutation.
Okay.
So first, second, and third degree relatives all count. Mom and dad's side, don't ever forget that you're half your dad's DNA, so the cancer on that side matters. When you look at these inherited mutations like BRCA that tremendously predispose you to getting breast and other cancers, that accounts for only 5 to 10% of all breasts.
What's BRCA?
BRCA. Like a gene mutation that...
So that's something that you go get tested to see if you have it?
Yes, you have to test your DNA, so saliva or blood. Okay. There are about 11 known gene mutations directly tied into elevating your breast cancer risk.
No
I mean,
way.
Crazy high, like as high as 87% risk.
Wow. So do you have a kit that you can order at home to test that?
We do. We have one at pinklotus.com.
No way.
Yes. They mail it to you. It's from Color, and it's just your saliva. You mail it back, and it comes with certified genetic counseling so you can understand your results.
So with that test, you'll know if you have the genetic mutations, and then you kind of can be more aware. And
you can be more aware, and then knowing something like this suddenly it makes you more proactive with the dietary and lifestyle changes. Yeah. Because you're like, okay, I cannot be at the mercy of my DNA.
Yeah.
But back to that point, only 5 to 10% of all breast cancer comes down to genetic mutations. And if only 13% of people even have a first degree relative, what's it all about? And yeah, that's what I dive into in this book. It is about not only diet and nutrition, although I think that's first and foremost your best defense against all diseases, including breast cancer.
Yeah.
But alcohol, obesity, exercise, hormone replacement therapy. We touched upon emotional and mental stress, mm-hmm, and environmental toxicities.
Yeah.
So all of these things collide in different ways in each body, but we have so much control.
Yeah, I got to move to the woods. That's really what we have to do.
Right? Off the grid.
So I want to talk about who's at risk, misconceptions, prevention, surgery, and this article that I found just a couple days ago that talks about how breast cancer spread after surgery. So I want you to explain that a little bit to us. But let's start with, first of all, Sheryl Crow wrote the foreword to your book. And I know Sheryl Crow has a meningioma brain tumor because she came out with that a while back. And I was the only person I had known that had had it. And she didn't have surgery on hers because I don't think she's had symptoms that have affected her. But you treated her. She had a biopsy or two biopsies with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't quite understand in her foreword, but first of all, can we just read the fun part actually before we get to the meat and potatoes? She was like, I'm embarrassed to say when I first walked into my appointment with Dr. Christy Funk, I wanted to turn around and leave. I thought, there's no way this young woman whose beauty rivals Jessica Simpson's can be the doctor I've heard so much about from my gynecologist and my internist as being someone who is widely known for her dedication and expertise to breast surgery. Boy, was I wrong. And then, of course, she goes on to just gush about you. Mm-hmm. And that is like something that if anyone's listening, yes, she is absolutely stunning. And she went to Stanford. So she's stunning and smart, which is crazy. Crazy combination. But she found out after a mammogram that she needed two biopsies. And then she actually needed further treatment. I didn't know that about her.
Yeah. We went in for the biopsies. It was calcifications on her mammogram that highlighted an area of concern. And when we couldn't get to it with just a little biopsy, so we had to do surgery, and the final pathology showed the cancer.
So she did have breast cancer.
She had breast cancer. She needed radiation. And
wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot going on in one body.
I know.
And it had nothing to do with the brain tumor.
No, not at all.
Isn't that amazing? So remember when I got my brain tumor, I had to come in and get an exam to make sure that it wasn't maybe coming from the breast, because sometimes it goes from the breast to the brain.
Right. So breast cancer, when you have it and it spreads, the four most common places are brain, bone, lung, and liver. So yeah, you had come in, yeah, so we could do a double check on those.
Yeah.
On those girls of yours.
Yes. Thankfully, we were okay. First, give me the statistics. Like, how many women? I read that it's the number one killer of women, 20-something.
20 to 59 years old.
Yeah.
Number one cancer killer. And, you know, who's at risk? Everyone. It's 1 in 8 women. That is 12.5% chance that you will get breast cancer.
So what do you think it is?
I think it's largely our diet.
Really?
Yes. But it's all the other things I listed.
This is something I thought of the other night. I don't know why this came to me, but I was like, okay, women, 20-something, whatever, everyone's doing Botox. I'm like, I wonder if Botox has something to do with all of this stuff. Because you have to think, and spray tanners. And I remember when I got my brain tumor, I was like, I use a lot of that spray tanner shit. What if that has something to do with it? Or I don't know. Like, you think of the beauty products we're using as women. Why us? Why are we getting so many cancers? We, like, the statistics for men and women, we actually have a higher risk of all cancer rates than men. It was like 1 out of 3 women. I think it's like 1 out of 5 men will get cancer, something like that.
I have to look that up, because 1 in 3 men get prostate cancer. So, but that is their version of breast cancer. It is a hormonally mediated cancer, and that is also within the realm of their control, more often than not, because I think prostate cancer is largely a dietary thing. So the things you're referring to, things like phthalates and cosmetics, and these are environmental toxicities that I refer to and how to minimize them. The BPA, bisphenol A in plastics. You have things like formaldehyde coming off your couch. I have a fun section in the book that just gives you the top 8 ways to reduce your environmental toxicities. Mm-hmm. One simple idea, for example, spider plants. There are plants that NASA, you know, astronauts found, remove toxins from the air. So all of these things that like ovens and household cleaning products and your couch emits, you can detoxify the air by having a few of these cheap, totally easy. Like I have no green thumb and spider plants are hard to kill. So these are easy things.
I have heard about these plants that actually, you know, are helpful in these areas.
Exactly.
So spider plants.
Spider plants, mother-in-law's tongue, aloe vera.
Going to Amazon.
Aloe vera too? Yeah, aloe vera plants.
Wow. Okay.
So, but back to this idea. It's like, think about putting sugar cubes on a scale, right? And each one of these things, like the spray tanning, right, that you're mentioning, each one of these is a little sugar cube that's maybe a little bit carcinogenic, but what are you putting on the other scale? And that's what I want to focus on. I mean,
balancing.
I focus on both, but it's, no, I want that scale to slam down with all the good things you're doing. So all of the antioxidants. When I went into 2 chapters, what to eat and what not to eat, to write this book, I dove into food science like I had never done. You don't get this education at all. There are 0 minutes to put into nutrition in medical school, right? And I was in med school. I finished med school 22 years ago. So I went in to prove my point that was tons of fruits and vegetables, lean meats like chicken, turkey, fish, you know, high fiber, low fat diet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blown away by what I found there. The body's cellular and immune response to consuming animal fat and animal protein is so detrimental, is so cancer-causing, that my 3 sons and my husband and I became vegan in 1 day.
Vegan?
Yes.
So you don't do dairy, nothing?
No meat, no fish, no dairy, no eggs.
I just got the chills everywhere.
It's been 9.5 months.
Wow.
And we have not wavered once because I'm so convicted by this science. And I lay it out, I hope, beautifully and in an easy and fun way to read in the book so that you all can understand too. Even if you just start to limit these things, your body is so forgiving. I'll tell you a quick study because it'll blow your mind. They took 50 obese women and they measured 2 things. One was IGF-1, which is the biggest inflammatory marker in your body, insulin-like growth factor. Okay, IGF-1, they took their level. They took their blood and dripped it on a petri dish filled with human breast cancer cells. A few cells died because everyone has some defenses in their immune system. These 50 obese women went away for just 12 days and did 2 things. A whole food plant-based diet, so tons of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, healthy fats like avocado, and limiting the meat and the dairy and the eggs. And they exercised every day, which for them was like walking around the block.
Yeah.
They come back 12 days later, drew the IGF-1 level, had plummeted, took their blood, put it back on the petri dish, and 90% of the breast cancer cells disappeared on the spot.
Wow.
Just by eliminating that toxic exposure to the animal fat and animal protein for less than 2 weeks, transformed their blood into a cancer-kicking machine.
Wow.
So it is.
Well, do you think
serious.
It's because, okay, so is it because the animal fats and proteins are so, you know, altered with all of the chemicals and the hormones that they're pumping the animals with? Or so then saying the organic meats are okay or no?
Okay, so there's several levels. One is, yes, these meats, for the most part, all conventionally grown meat, you've got GMO feed, right? So GMO meaning that the corn and soy that these animals are fed have tons of pesticides and herbicides and fertilizers and all of these things that are carcinogenic, and it sticks to the feed because they're made to resist these herbicides, right? So they can dump all of the insect killer and stuff on the plants. So they're eating bad things. The cows themselves are getting tranquilizers, antibiotics. They're getting infections. But first and foremost, the grossest thing of all is all conventionally grown cows get Zarinol, which is the world's most potent synthetic man-made estrogen. It's shoved behind the ear of every single cow so that they grow fat fast because they only have 18 months to make it to 1,700 pounds in time for slaughter. Okay, so think about, now, does that really matter? So, okay, they're growing their cows fast. Turns out that if you take Zarinol and you put it on a petri dish of normal breast cancer cells, you can tell we do a lot of stuff in petri dishes, they will turn into breast cancer cells in 21 days.
Zearalenol.
Zearalenol. It's in every single conventionally grown meat. If you look at they looked at the urine of New Jersey girls 10 to 12 years old. 78.5% of them had Zearalenol in their urine. Every single one of them had eaten meat the night before. None of the others who didn't have Zearalenol ate meat the night before.
Whoa.
Okay, so yes, you're right. There's a lot of additives that we're then consuming. So what if you go organic? Turns out you have to cook most meat. Most people don't eat steak tartare, right?
Yeah.
As soon as you otherwise, admittedly, deliciously grill, smoke, barbecue your meat, you are forming a carcinogen on the surface called heterocyclic amine, mm-hmm. HCAs. And we can go through all of them, but there's a bunch more letters, right? But they're all bad for you. And they are forming from the combination of creatine in meat and heat. This does not happen with barbecuing or grilling broccoli. Like the char on broccoli mm-hmm. is not carcinogenic, but it is on your meat. Even if you slow cook it in the oven, a long duration of lesser heat, like to cook your chicken breast and bake it, HCAs. So you are consuming carcinogens whenever you eat cooked meat.
Wow. So it's funny, we did pet week like 2 weeks ago on this show, and the pet holistic vet was like, you can't give your dogs kibble because the heat process by which they make it produces two carcinogens. Really, like, it was funny. We learned that there was no difference between humans and animals. Like, we should be doing the same thing for both.
Right.
And eating clean and pure. But I didn't realize that cooking meat did that as well.
Right.
That's intense.
And then, of course, all processed meat has nitrates, and they're completely carcinogenic. In fact, so the IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, this is a group that cannot be bought. They meet every year in Lyon, France, like the super brainiacs of the world, and they tell the world what is safe to eat and what's not safe to eat. And in July 2015, so just a few years back, they met and looked. There were 22 researchers, 10 countries, 800 epidemiologic studies looking to answer two questions. Is red meat carcinogenic to humans? And is processed meat carcinogenic? And I did not know until I wrote my own book that all processed meat is on the list of absolutely carcinogenic to humans, along with tobacco and asbestos and plutonium. Processed meat, in case you forgot, is hot dogs, deli slices, including my perfect turkey breast slice that I had rolled up like a cigarette, apparently, and given to my kids for lunch the very day I read that study.
Wow.
How come we don't know this?
I think we're just so overwhelmed in life that I think everyone's just like, you know what, I'm just going to do my best. But the problem is, once you get hit with a diagnosis, you're like, shit. And it's like, if we can all just get ourselves to a place where we do a little bit better, it would be great. Because what I do want to know is, how did you get your kids? Like, it's one thing for you as an adult and as a doctor to say, okay, that's it, I've had it. But how did you convince your kids, and how old are they?
So we have triplet boys. They're 8 years old. And I told them about my research, and then we watched What the Health. If you haven't heard Ooh. Or seen that documentary on Netflix, it is
kid friendly.
We went to Whole Foods like the very next day, and Justin pointed at all that great gourmet cheese, which, by the way, I had a full drawer of, like, five-year-age Gouda, Manchego, Brie. Like, if there's any listeners out there going, there's no way, girl, I'm stopping my cheese, I was right there with you. I thought I had it down with all my fruits and veggies and just a little bit of chicken breast and salmon. I ate so much sushi, I'm sure I was radio. Active.
Me
he didn't
too.
Care.
I ate a lot of sushi.
So yeah, he pointed at the cheese. He's like, look, mom, they just don't know.
Wow. So, okay. So you've cut fish too. So tell us about the fish part of this.
Okay. Let's talk. So I mentioned in the obese women study that they drew the blood and looked at IGF-1, the insulin-like growth factor. Fish will spike your IGF-1. So let's talk for a second about a really quick concept. I don't want to you to think I'm going to go into a biochem class for you. But the big thing in all your life is called oxidative stress. Oxidants are going to be chemical messengers, free radicals flying around your body trying to tear things down. You also need them. Free radicals have their place. They make you breathe. If you cut yourself open, they bring inflammation to heal and repair it. But in excess, they keep running around and eventually cause DNA mutations and cell damage. And whatever they piss off the most becomes your problem.
Mm-hmm.
If it's your brain, Alzheimer's. If it's your heart, heart attack. If it's your pancreas, diabetes. If it's your breast, breast cancer. Okay? So IGF-1 is the big daddy of them all that creates free radicals and damage. There is a group of people born without the ability to use their IGF-1. It's called Laron syndrome. See, IGF-1 makes everything grow cells, grow into cancer, grow into the brain, grow into the liver. People with Laron syndrome are all dwarfs because they can't grow. People with Laron syndrome have never, ever had a single case of breast cancer in their lives. People with Laron syndrome have never, ever had diabetes in their lives.
So you're saying all dwarfs have never had to deal with any of this?
No, all dwarfs that are short because of
Laron syndrome. So, I thought there was a given.
No. So there are different reasons for having short stature. But this Laron syndrome thing is all about the IGF-1. So that should show you how serious and how connected IGF-1 is to cancer and other major killers like diabetes.
And it's all food.
So, okay, yes, it's mostly food. You get an excess of IGF-1 in response to one and only one thing, animal protein.
Wow.
If you eat legumes or soy.
If I had a bag of Skittles, protein, it wouldn't have made a difference. Not that Skittles are good.
No, it's processed and
good,
pure sugar, which is a different issue. But yeah, so the point is this IGF-1 level goes sky high when you eat fish. Fish also, especially salmon, we hear, omega-3 fatty acids, like that's the healthy fat. It is the healthy fat. It also comes attached to terrible saturated fat in your salmon. So there's a lot of saturated fat and your IGF-1 goes through the roof. Oh, by the way, except for sushi aficionados, we cooked the salmon, and now we're back to
carcinogens. Okay, so what are you eating now?
Oh, I am eating,
because this is where I think now I'm at this place. I'm like, okay, I gotta drop everything. But how do I not be anemic? Because I cut all meat a couple years ago and got super anemic.
Okay,
and then I got myself better, and then I got quit meat again, and that didn't work. So now I don't eat chicken, but I eat red meat to keep the anemia status normal, because I couldn't eat enough beans and things to get myself non-anemic.
Hmm. Well, the protein sources, as long as you're not gluten, wheat gluten allergic, then seitan is a great source. That is like the vegan secret to reproducing meaty tastes. So seitan and soy, we got to talk a little bit more.
I thought soy was bad.
Okay. I did too, until I wrote my book, and I'm so embarrassed. I'm so sorry, all my breast cancer patients.
You told them no soy before.
I spit that miso out of your mouth. I was like every doctor out there who is going to continue to tell you that soy is a villain. I was just uninformed. This is not a pendulum that's going to swing. Like, soy was good in 2018 and now it's bad in 2020. Here's what happened. All of us doctors that care about breast cancer, 80% of all breast cancers are fed and fueled by estrogen. Soy is a phytoestrogen, a plant-based estrogen, the genistein in soy. So we just knee-jerk response was, hey, we don't know what that plant estrogen is doing in your body. It's probably feeding the cancer cells.
So just
the way
cut it.
Just cut it.
It's easier to cut.
Yeah. But you're not going to die without soy, so just stop it. And that was my response for 17 years. I've laser focused on breast cancer surgery. That's all I have done. And I did not know the truth. Now I do. So here's the truth. There's two estrogen receptors in your body, alpha and beta. Your own estrogen is going to attach to the alpha that's attached to cancer cells that makes them grow and divide. Now, the phytoestrogens in soy attach to beta estrogen receptors with 1600% more affinity. They don't care about the alpha receptor. They go to beta and they do two things when they get there. They shut alpha down.
Ooh.
So your own estrogen can't go harming your breast cells. And they go out into your peripheral fat and inhibit an enzyme that's taking steroids from your body like testosterone and making more estrogen. It's called aromatase. And it shuts that enzyme down. Since 2009, there have been 6 studies in estrogen-driven breast cancers in patients looking at soy consumption and recurrence and death. And guess what? Not only is soy safe to eat, if you don't have breast cancer and you consume it regularly, you have 60% less breast cancer than someone who doesn't eat soy. And if you already have breast cancer and you consume soy regularly, you have 60% less recurrence and 29% less death from breast cancer.
Whoa.
So not only am I releasing you from your soy ban, I'm actually
encouraging
you to eat it.
So you're talking about dietary changes, and you talk about all of the dietary changes in the book. You even have your smoothie recipe that you make every morning.
Yes.
Which I think is great. So what other things can women do to prevent?
Far and away, the biggest thing that you can control that contributes to breast cancer is weight. So being overweight, obese, or just overweight is elevating your, it's doubling your chances of getting breast cancer. And if you have breast cancer, unfortunately, it is doubling both your recurrence and your death rate from cancer.
Wow.
So the reason why adipose or fat contributes to all of this cancer stuff is that fat is a source of estrogen. So even if you're postmenopausal and you have a little extra chubbiness going on, you have higher estrogen levels. Not enough to make you fertile or stop all those hot flashes, but it's enough to fuel a cancer. And overweight and obese women have higher estrogen levels than normal weight. So if you don't know if you're too chubby or not, you need to go to pinklotus.com/BMI, body mass index. We've got a calculator there, and you just put in your height and your weight, and whoop, we'll find out if you're too fat.
You know, what's interesting is, so when you think about how the world has gotten so gross with food and, you know, everything's, you know, packaged and processed and all of that, it's no wonder, you know, the weight level has gone up and up and up and people have become more and more obese. And, you know, it's not just breast cancer, it's diabetes, it's so many diseases. So when you look at changing your diet, you're going to prevent so many things, obviously,
so many.
And you're going to be happier and have more energy. You said something earlier that I can't let go, and you talked about estrogen and how that contributes. So is there a connection between IVF and cancer?
Thankfully, no. Okay. So there have been over 55 studies looking at all different types of fertility drugs that you would use. And there is a small bump in breast cancer in the first 5 years after use, but that's not causation. That means the estrogens were fueling a cancer that already existed in your breast.
Ah, okay.
And then actually, thankfully, you were protected. Again, there's breast cancer protection 10 years plus after using IVF.
Oh, wow.
So that is not associated. Neither birth control pills, in the sum total of things, you can make stats sound so scary. So birth control pills increase breast cancer by 20%. That sounds insane. It's not. Let me tell you something. When you're in your 20s using birth control pills, your chances of getting breast cancer are not 1 in 8. We'd all have it by next New Year's Day, if that were true. So in your 20s, it's 1 in 1,587 20-year-olds, 1 in. And then when I say, 20% increase from birth control, that number becomes 1.2 women in 1,587.
Okay.
So see how little that is? You're way more likely to have an unwanted pregnancy. Don't think twice about birth control. Just take it.
Okay. What about cell phones in the pockets? I know, like, I want to get to some of the myth debunkers.
Yes. Cell phones, you can put them wherever you want. They're not going to cause brain cancer, and they're not going to cause breast cancer, because the electromagnetic fields are the wrong wavelength.
But see, California Health Department actually put out a press release, like, this was like 2 months ago, where they actually did make the connection between brain tumors and cell phones. And they said you have to put them on airplane mode and this whole thing. That just came out recently. So you should take a look at that, because I did this event for Susan G. Komen in San Diego, and they were doing this myth debunker. And they're like, you can put your cell phone, you know, in your pocket. I'm like, I wouldn't say that we can. We shouldn't. Like, it's electrical. And like, why would we want to put that on our body? Right? Doesn't that seem like not a good place?
It seems like it until you get into the science. So the electromagnetic pull of the center of the earth is like 100,000 times stronger. So if that were able to transform, if the cell phone could transform your breast cells into breast cancer, then our whole bodies would be cancer because of the earth.
Well, then I would just ask Siri, hey, Siri, can you kill the breast cancer cells, please? Thank you.
Right. As long as you're right there.
Since you're there, I read this study, or this article that I sent to you, that MIT had done this research that suggests breast cancer spreads after surgery. That studies have shown a spike in breast cancer metastases 12 to 18 months after lumpectomy or mastectomy. And that freaked me out, because, you know, everyone always is like, the second you have surgery and oxygen hits,
right,
you know, that's when it spreads. And that's what everybody says. I remember my brother, when my mom was going to have surgery, he's like, he was saying that. And I'm like,
right,
no, but maybe what?
Tell us. It does. It does spread. So I talk about all this in the book too, because it's a myth, but it's not necessarily an erroneous one. Here's something that is going to shock and scare everyone, and then I have the way to calm you down.
Cool.
In 1974, so this is how long ago, the NIH, National Institutes of Health, they funded a study. They put breast cancer tumors into rats, and then they measured their blood, and guess what they found? A cancer the size of a sugar cube or a peanut M&M will shed 3.2 million cancer cells into the bloodstream every 24 hours. Yes. So
when it's exposed?
No, just being in your body.
Okay.
Okay. So why then doesn't everybody like completely die of whatever cancer within a second because there's that many cells? And the answer is your immune system, a functional, healthy immune system, is clearing out these cells with basically one pass through your body. And if they are able to, say, land in the liver or some other place you hear that breast cancer wants to go, usually they don't find the soil there, so to speak, conducive to their growth. Mm-hmm. But how do you make that soil inhospitable to cancer? How do you make it devoid of the inflammation and the free radicals and the estrogen levels and the blood vessel formation called angiogenesis that cancer loves and thrives on? You do it by filling your body with antioxidants. We're back to the broccoli and blueberries.
Yeah, and the gooseberries you talk about.
Oh, the Indian gooseberry is at the tippity top of a study of over 3,100 foods that looked at everything from coconuts to Coca-Cola and the antioxidant content. And the very, very top, 124 times the blueberry, was the Indian gooseberry, which, by the way, no store has.
So is you it get, yummy?
No, you get the powdered form.
And
a little
throw it
big,
in your smoothie?
And I put it in my smoothie so you don't taste it.
Indian gooseberries.
Indian gooseberry.
Okay.
So back to this study that just came out a couple days ago. Basically, this is not a surprise to me at all. As your body's defenses and immune system have to rush to an area of injury, i.e. your breast that just got removed or a lumpectomy in the site, your cells rush to heal and repair this. They're not paying attention to the rogue 3.2 million that are flying around.
Yeah, so those guys go rogue somewhere else and wreak havoc while you're fixing over here.
Which is exactly why I counsel women, unfortunately, with stage 4 breast cancer. So we already know that the cancer cells are out there, and then they have a recurrence in their breast, and they really just, they can feel that, like with their hand. They're like, I want you to operate. Please take this off. And I counsel them against it for this very reason. I already knew that, you know, as I create inflammation and trauma here in your breast, the known spot in your bone.
You do it when you have no choice, but if you have a choice, you say don't.
Oh, here's your antidote. Just take ibuprofen right after your surgery. The same study showed that if you took ibuprofen, we're talking like Motrin, Advil, Aleve, generic ibuprofen, that that keeps your immune system fine and those cells won't spread.
Interesting. And the Indian gooseberries. Dr. Funk, so now we're going to have like a part two and probably a part three, because I didn't get even like 10% of what I wanted in here, because there's so much content and you're so educated on this. So everybody stay tuned. We are going to find some more scheduled time with Dr. Funk. Thank you so much for this great book. Again, it's called Breast, the Owner's Manual. It's available wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, etc. Make sure you guys pick that up. And of course, if you want to follow Dr. Funk, you can follow her on Instagram and Twitter at Dr. Christy Funk.
And follow us at Maria Menounos, at SiriusXM Stars, at Miss Ashley Daniels. And remember, guys, be nice people, make good choices, and be present.